I'm Casper Zogovins, Dogman. You're listening to Sixth Sense Podcast.
Is this just another day? This God forgotten place. First comes love and then comes pain. Let the games begin.
Questions. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Post Lockout Sixth Sense Podcast. Creech, you're joining me in studios once again. How are you?
Unreal. Glad to be talking about something not CBA related. For once.
I know. Now we can actually come in here with some regularity, actually have productive things to talk about besides the CBA, ramifications from the CBA, and anything else that has to do with legality, legalese jargon, whatever. We can actually talk about real hockey. And just listening to the personalities from the Senators organization appear on Team 1200 throughout the course of the week has been... My excitement has slowly been building. I think when I was listening to Brian Murray and Paul McLean speak this week, I kind of realized how much I missed the game. Do you share that feeling?
I knew how much I missed it already. I like what you said, and I think you wrote that in one of your posts, that you realized that. And for sure, like hearing, especially Paul McLean, that guy, he's just such a straight shooter. Everything he says, I like. I love his interviews. No, I missed it from day one, and I couldn't wait to get it back. I just... seeing highlights of Patty Kane's goals at the Spengler Cup and Datsyuk shootout goals and stuff. I just want to see it. Last one was disgusting.
Just disgusting. Training camp opens this weekend, hopefully. That's not confirmed yet, but they're anticipating a Saturday or Sunday start. I'm sure all the players are eager to go. The coaching staff is eager to go. Paul McLean was on the radio yesterday, essentially said that his top six is settled. McCulloch will be starting with Spezza and Silverberg on the right-hand side. I don't think anyone should be shocked by that, especially with Silverberg's production at the AHL level in the past month and a half. Guillaume Latondres will be the left wing with Turris and Alfredson. Alfie's back for his last year. Hopefully he'll be playing more, but he's back, which is fantastic. And yeah, the bottom six, I think, is probably where you're going to see a lot of those battles formulating. Well, is there anything in particular you're looking forward to seeing up front?
Well, if you don't count anyone coming up from Bingo, Hoffman, someone like that, or I don't know if Stefan Nason's going to be invited to camp at all.
He was eligible. I don't know if they've actually addressed whether or not he would be there.
Yeah, I know that him and CeCe are eligible. I haven't heard them say if they're bringing him or not. Aside from, I think, McLean's comments where he was saying that he wished that he had a full camp to see him. But not counting those guys, there's one extra.
One extra forward?
One extra. So you got Regan Smith, Greening, O'Brien, Condra, Neil, and Doggy.
I was actually surprised because sticking with this McLean interview yesterday morning, I was blown away by how high he is on Peter Regan. At least he sold him very well. And we've always kind of been, well, at least I can speak for me anyways, I've been a bit of a Regan mark. I always saw kind of value. I thought he was a smart two-way player with some offensive upside, even if it is modest. But he was a guy who has always kind of intrigued me, and I'm expecting bigger and better things from, but he just can't stay healthy on the ice with his shoulders.
Yeah.
But McLean sort of shared that viewpoint, and from what I gathered from the interview, it seems like he is entrenched on this team's third line, and I think that's a position that a lot of fans would have looked at Zach Smith, and especially with the new contract that Zach Smith signed before the lockout, and they would have viewed him as a third-line guy with Jimmy O'Brien on the fourth line. So are you surprised by that?
I still kind of see them playing together. If Regan's healthy, I like the way that I'd see the third line go would be Regan Smith Greening with I don't know. What for me, Jimmy O'Brien's my fourth line center no matter what, and I love that. And then Chris Neal would be on one wing, and then I don't know. It's got to be Eric Condra, right?
Yeah.
Like Doggy's got to be the odd man out, 13th forward. So no, that doesn't surprise me. And Regan, he was always responsible. When they called him up halfway through that awful season under, I think, the one where Clouston took over, he played well. He showed flashes of offense. I think he had that one unreal goal against St. Louis. And then obviously there was the playoffs against Pittsburgh in round one.
Yep.
He just hasn't been able to stay healthy. So you can see that he has the offensive potential there. So getting someone who's responsible on your third line that could potentially pitch in some goals, I like that.
Can't complain. And then you have your size on the wings as well. You have Colin Greening, obviously. and you would have a guy like Zach Smith or another Eric Condra who can you can bring different elements to that line.
It's going
to
be a cycle line and a line that can
probably lots of juggling and shuffling just to keep everybody healthy. And it's, well, obviously the forward ranks are a little bit more settled than the blue line. You're shaking your head. We're actually having Denis Poffin on the show later from Rogers Sportsnet, and I'm sure he's going to love to chip in and chime in on the state of the Ottawa blue line.
You're going to have to ask him if he's in game shape.
Yeah, exactly. Mark Mathot, obviously, is probably going to be the de facto partner for Erik Karlsson to start. Are you surprised by that?
It's kind of what everyone was saying when they acquired him for Nick Foligno. So that doesn't surprise me, and really, like, I don't know much about Mark Mathot. Like, I can't remember seeing him play. I'm sure I've probably seen him. He didn't stand out. I didn't notice anything. But who are you going to have on that top pairing? Like,
the Jared Cowan injury really buggered things up.
Oh, big time.
And heading into the season, you're looking at three new defensive pairings. Philip Kubo's gone. Cowan's out for the season. Matt Gilroy is gone on the third pairing, so Chris Phillips is going to be partnered with someone new. He has some experience playing with Gonchar, but that pairing scares the crap out of me.
But yeah, well, and Philly and Gonchar, neither of them are ready for top pairing minutes.
But Gonchar played in the KHL, man.
He put up some decent numbers too, playing with his best buddy.
But maybe he'll get traded to Pittsburgh.
Maybe. It'd have to be for a defenseman.
Yeah, and then who's going to move the puck? Which is the other question.
65 will play 60 minutes a night.
Oh, he almost has to. Jimmy O'Brien has some experience on the back end, though. He grew up as a defenseman.
What, like novice?
Mind you, so did Alfie's.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you think they make a trade? I was going over...
Those are the rumors that are circulating right now, right?
Move something? What, like a...
Well, obviously, there's the wealth of goaltending.
There's that. Maybe one of their three first-round picks they made in the Zibanejad draft. I don't know. There's nothing left in the... I would take a look at the UFA corpse, I guess, if you want to call that, because there's nothing. What do you want, like a 41-year-old Sean O'Donnell?
He's a local boy.
Foster. There's not much.
Another like, local
slim,
boy.
Slim Pickens. I didn't even mention those two on purpose. I kind of did the Foster one after you.
Foster came on the podcast one year.
he was solid. He had that big shot from the point, and then that scary injury with who was it? Torrey Mitchell, I think. That
Torrey
ran
Mitchell
him into the end boards. And
Minnesota
he hasn't obviously been the same since. So I don't know what. I don't know. Or do they just
it
give?
Is, well, that's the thing. You're looking at a lot of the guys who are left in free agency. There are limitations for each and every one of them.
Chris Campoli.
And you're not going to get a second round pick for that guy anymore.
Well, yeah. Well done. Like, would you not rather give, I don't know, Weirkosh
and Benoit
a shot on that bottom pairing? Like, are you going to get much of an upgrade over them through the UFA market?
And there's the familiarity factor there as well, right? Like, that's the top pairing down in Binghamton. And from all reports that we've seen, I don't watch a lot of Binghamton games. I don't want to watch those streams. But yeah, from all accounts, they've been playing very well on the top pairing. Their plus minus looks very great. Looks great. So,
so is that a better option?
That's an option versus some external option. I'm sure it will.
Unless something comes via a trade.
Yeah. And going back to your point, there are a lot of forwards who can play. And if you look at the depth on the farm, guys like Hoffman, Stone, who I don't even think we've mentioned to this point. You have Shane Prince, who's starting to play very well down there. Jean-Gabriel Pageau. Same thing. And
Stefan DaCosta
is down there as well. So there are a number of guys at the AHL level who could at least contribute in some capacity or play some minutes at the NHL level this season. So I don't know whether the organization would make a move right now. Maybe they'll use that 10-15 game window that they kind of gave DaCosta last year before turning to the Phoenix Coyotes, and acquiring Kyle Turris. You know, maybe they'll give them that kind of window and go from there.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
Mind you, in a 10-15 game window, you might be out of the playoff race by then. It's a sprint. Everyone's saying it's a sprint.
Would you be upset if they missed the playoffs this year?
No, absolutely not. And I think from a fan perspective, in a 48-game season, it's more palatable to miss the playoffs because you don't have to stick through an 82-game stretch. Like, if your team's bad, get it out of the way early. Supposedly, it's a great draft year as well. It's deep.
That's what everyone's saying.
And if you finish out of the playoff picture, you have a chance to draft number one.
So you want to talk about goaltending, or you want to save that for Potvin?
No, we can talk goaltending now. It kind of fits in with the whole trading depth right now. So,
what do you want to see happen?
Ideally,
what you want to see, not what you think's going to happen because of numbers and contracts.
Long term, I want Craig Anderson to play. I want him to play well, and I want him traded in the offseason. I want Ben Bishop. Ideally, without even talking about on-ice play, it'd be nice to see them retain Ben Bishop in some capacity, whether it's like a one-year deal where you bump his pay slightly just to like buy out that free agent part of it. But he's unrestricted at the end of the year. So at least on paper, he looks like the guy who's probably going to be moved to the side. But Craig Anderson, in your opinion, who would return more value in a trade right now? Craig Anderson, a guy who's been a number one goaltender for a number of years, or a guy like Ben Bishop who's still, he's NHL ready, but he doesn't have the track record.
Well, he hasn't proved anything.
Exactly.
I'd say Anderson at this point, unless like he takes a huge stumble out of the gate. But what did the Senators trade for Bishop? A second rounder? Was it one second rounder?
Right.
So do you think they could get much more back than that?
Well, that's the benchmark. You know, that's what you're weighing. If you're moving a goaltender now, you have to recoup more than a second-round pick. Otherwise, what was the point?
So I think Craig Anderson does that.
You'd hope so. Maybe you could return an all-star like Brian Elliott in return. No? You're shaking your head?
No offense to Kid Els, but...
Kid Els. Now you're referring to guys by their Twitter handles. Very nice.
I forgot the number. I think there's a number in there somewhere. Number one.
30?
Kid Els 1? I don't know.
Kid Els 30? 31? Casey Jones mask. Personally, I can't envision a scenario in which Lehner's on the roster opening night.
Same.
That's no disrespect to what he's done over the course of this season, but I look at him and you need that kid to play and develop. To this point in his career, he hasn't stayed healthy or played at a productive level over the course of a full season. He's been exceptionally good in stretches, and I think that you have to see that consistency over the course of a full season.
There's no point bringing him as a backup this year to get in 10 or less games.
Right.
So, and that's
because Anderson is a workhorse as well. You know, like that's a guy who's going to play 60, 65 games, 70 games a year.
So he could play probably 40, 45 games for sure,
mm-hmm,
if he's healthy and going well. So if that's the situation, I'd like to see Ben Bishop as a backup for sure. Keep Leonard playing. But do you give Leonard a chance to be your number one?
Like, this
I don't
year?
Think so. This, exactly.
Are you, well, if you're throwing all your eggs in the Leonard basket, and if he struggles, and
you'd have to,
you've seen a lot of people advocate, all right, let's put Leonard in, see what happens. What's the worst that can happen? He's playing really well in the AHL right now. But if you expose him to a situation in which the team's weakest link is its defense, and he starts getting torched by good NHL teams early on, especially with the team not playing particularly well.
So Marc-Andre,
because it could happen, right? You don't want to destroy whatever confidence he's built up at the AHL right now. And I think that has to be a bit of a concern, because the team, Ottawa might not play well in the first stretch because the guys haven't gotten together in a while. They haven't played hockey in a long time. So you run the risk of destroying whatever confidence he has right now.
I think it would be great to see him start the season. I just don't see it happening.
And one of my favorite games from last season is when he came in, faced Boston, when he was kind of struggling at the AHL level.
Did he get a shutout that game?
Yep.
Yeah.
Pitched a 1-0 shutout.
With
Timmy
a lot of saves, I believe.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
One of the highlights for me last season, and that was a big game. So he's the future. I don't think there's any.
Oh, for sure.
There's no questioning that. You hope he has the mental makeup now and the maturity to put a potential demotion behind him if he isn't the recipient of the backup job.
You got to think they'd be telling him the same thing, though, right? Like, listen, Robin, you're our best goaltender this year, mm-hmm, for sure right now. We don't want to have you coming up here and sitting on the bench all year. Go finish your season in bingo. You'll be here next year for sure.
And injuries happen, man.
Yeah.
That's the other part of it. If you move a goaltender now and Craig Anderson blows out a groin in the first 2 weeks of the season, all right, Robin, you're the number one. Essentially, he is like the 1B, because if Anderson goes down, I don't think Ben Bishop's going to be the guy.
It'd be nice to see, though, just to see what they have and what they can get.
For Bishop? If you move Bishop, you're trading potential.
But so move Anderson, trade deadline or next year. Trade deadline if things don't work out, or next year, and have Robin Lehner as your number one with Ben Bishop as a backup. Kind of do like a bit of a platoon with 55-60% going to Len Sanity.
Wink, wink. Of course, we've been talking Senators hockey for the past, I don't know, 15 minutes. I'd imagine. Big news down in the Big Smoke. Brian Burke has been canned The timing of it couldn't be any more weird, especially from an outsider perspective. Joining us when we get back will be Sean McIndoe from Dan Goes Brown. So stay tuned. We will be right back. Listeners, joining us on the line right now is a man who contributes to Grantland, the Globe and Mail, and he is the famous blogger from Down Goes Brown, Sean McIndoe. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. First things first, what is your reaction to the Brian Burke firing today?
My reaction is surprise. This one is it's a stunning move in terms of the timing. I don't think anybody is surprised that Brian Burke was on thin ice. That has been an ongoing story in Maple Leafs land for at least a year, if not more. And I think the general consensus was that this was going to be the make-or-break year. And if he had been let go even last summer at the beginning of the offseason, I don't think anyone would have been too shocked. But it's the timing that's really strange here. To do this right now, a week before the season's going to start up, when we're just days away from what everyone thinks is going to be this massive flurry of activity, it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. So that's where the surprise comes in on this one.
Yeah, you're right. It does seem kind of weird because you figure if they knew they were going to fire him, and listening to the comments this afternoon, it seemed like they thought his leadership wasn't a great fit for the new owners. Does this not seem weird not to have a guy in place who, once a lockout would end, already has the ball up and running and has a grasp of what's going on?
Exactly. I mean, you would think that if that was the decision you were going to make and that was the path you wanted to go down, you would do it as early as possible, because then that opens it up and you can put pretty much anyone you want in place. When they do it today, there's no point trying to do a search now for the perfect candidate. There's no point, you know, casting your net out and trying to figure out who's the best possible guy for the job, because there's no time for that. And so what you wind up with is this weird situation where they fire Brian Burke, and yet they replace him with Dave Nonis, who was his hand-picked assistant that he brought in, you know, his so-called confidant. Now, not to say that they agreed on everything, but the guy that Brian Burke had with him both in Vancouver and in Toronto, it seems strange. If you really feel like the organization's not going in the right direction, it certainly seems strange to remove Brian Burke and yet keep everybody else that he had put in place. But you've got no choice, because you have to keep going, and you have to have a front office. And so they stuck with what they could. But if they had done this back in June, then they would have had plenty of time to get somebody else, or at least to consider other candidates, and have Dave Nonis throw his hat in the ring if he wanted to, but make sure that they had the absolute best guy for the job.
Yeah, odd timing for sure. Dave Nonis looked terrific today during the press conference. Do you think he's ready for this?
Well, I think he's ready. I mean, he did the job in Vancouver, and he did a good job. He's been an assistant in Toronto. He certainly knows the organization well. He'll know the prospects. And the other thing that, you know, a lot of people don't realize, because Brian Burke is such a larger-than-life figure, because he's always in front of the TV cameras and there's all the bluster and the sound bites and everything that goes with that, people don't realize that Dave Nonis was doing an awful lot of the work. He did a lot of the negotiating, and then Brian Burke obviously would be the guy ultimately responsible for putting a stamp on it. But Dave Nonis was heavily involved, so that certainly would tell you that he's ready to take this on. It's not like he's moving into some sort of uncharted territory. It would also make you question why he's the automatic candidate to get the job if he's being as influential as we're to understand that he was, and given that the Leafs haven't had much success under either Burke or Nonis, again, you sort of wonder whether this is the perfect fit, but it's the only fit that they had available to them.
Cycling back a little bit, you mentioned that Burke has that larger-than-life personality. Do you attribute some of the fall, or Brian Burke's fall, to the fact that he was kind of sold to the Toronto fan base by the media as somewhat of a savant and a genius?
Well, I mean, there's an element of that, and there's an element of high expectations, and he certainly came in with high expectations. But I don't think Brian Burke's problem is that he failed to meet high expectations. I think his problem is that he failed to meet really any reasonable expectations that anybody could have had. So I don't think the expectations are the issue. What I think was the issue of anything as far as the personality was two things. Number one is he made lots of enemies in the media, and we know that even though that shouldn't matter, it does. Over a long enough time, the media can it can make things more difficult for you. But I think the bigger issue is that, look, Brian Burke was a guy, whatever you think of Brian Burke's plan and his roadmap, he is a guy that will look in the eye, tell you what he's going to do, and then he will go out and do it. And he's not shy about that. He is not a guy like we just had in Toronto before him, like John Ferguson, who hems and haws and doesn't really give you a plan and just seems to twist in the wind. Brian Burke knew what he was doing. He knew what he wanted to do, and he went out and did it. But the problem with that is when you call your shot, that's great. That makes you a hero when you're winning. When you lose, it just makes it so much easier for everyone to pile on, and it makes it so much easier for everyone to lose faith because you've already told them what the goal was. And then when you don't make it, you can't exactly go back and move the goalposts.
I was following you on Twitter this afternoon just to kind of gauge your immediate reaction to the deal. I noticed you had some concerns about ownership possibly meddling in the hockey personnel department. Do you have any confidence in ownership to stay out of the hockey making decisions?
Yeah, I mean, I've got zero confidence in any MLSE ownership to do anything when it comes to hockey decisions other than just stay out of the way, which is one reason why I thought Brian Burke was a great choice when they originally brought him in, because we know that the board had their hands in the sort of stuff that John Ferguson was trying to do, and Burke was a strong enough personality that you figured he wouldn't put up with any of that. If he was going to come to Toronto, it was only going to be under the conditions that it was his way or the highway. What we saw today, I mean, my original concern when I first kind of got in and got caught up, because I had been offline for a couple of hours when this news broke, my original concern was there were some reports out there, some speculation that this might have to do with Roberto Luongo. And either Brian Burke had a deal in place and the board didn't like it, or Brian Burke had an offer that he wasn't going to take and the board wanted him to take it. Now, since then, some of the experts and insiders have said, no, they don't think that's the case. But that's been replaced by a different line of thinking, which to me is just as much a concern, which is that the board and the owners and this new ownership and Bell and Rogers and all of these guys just didn't get along with Brian Burke, and they didn't like his personality, they didn't like his style, and in fact, I think one comment I saw was that they didn't think he was good for the brand. And I'll tell you, as a fan, I don't care if Brian Burke is a jerk. I really don't. If he's the best guy to put a winning team on the ice, I could care less if he's not fun to share an elevator with, or if he's not a guy who you can bring to a nice corporate lunch and have everyone get along. And I don't care whether he kisses the behind of his new bosses at Bell and Rogers. So if you want to fire Brian Burke based on his record, I think that's a pretty easy case to make. But if the problem is how he damages your brand, look, your brand is your professional sports team. Losing damages your brand, winning helps your brand. Go out and get the guy who's going to help you win the most, and I don't want to hear a bunch of corporate nonsense from these guys in suits about anything other than winning and losing.
Off the ice, I personally liked a couple of the trades Brian Burke made, specifically the Beauchemin trade where he got Lupo and Gardner, and the Phaneuf trade where he gave up practically nothing. But is Brian Burke's legacy going to be that Kessel trade?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's fairly or unfairly, that is going to be his legacy. And, I mean, I'm working this afternoon on putting a post together that's going to run on Grantland hopefully tonight or tomorrow. And one of the things I say in that post is that if that is Brian Burke's all-time worst trade that everyone is going to use to hang him with, there's a ton of general managers who would love, absolutely love, for the worst trade they ever made to be one where they brought in a top-10 scorer who was in his prime. That trade, even though it didn't work out the way Brian Burke wanted, I think you can still defend that trade on a lot of levels, and we're still a long way away from saying that that was some sort of decisive loss for Brian Burke. The bigger issue is not what the trade was, it's what it signaled. And that was the trade that gave the defining signal that Brian Burke was not going to do a rebuild. He had said that previously. He had come in and said, I can do this faster than 5 years. I don't need to do a rebuild. I don't need to burn it down. But it's a big difference between saying it and then going and making a trade where you give away your next two first-round picks. Because when he did that, he took away the safety net. he absolutely made it so that even if the team didn't get off to a good start, if he had misjudged the roster, if Vesa Toskala, who was the goalie he was putting his faith in at the time, turned out not to be okay after his surgery, there was no plan B. It wasn't like he could say, all right, I'm hitting reset on this, and we're going to go back and get a top pick and build that way. He took the safety net away, and unfortunately, sometimes you take the safety net away and then you face plant, and that's exactly what happened to him, and he never could recover from that decision. As much as you could defend the trade, it's not so much just the trade that he made, it's how it tied his hands for everything else that was going to come after.
One of the knocks on Burke has been that he hasn't been able to bring a goaltender, whether it was in Vancouver or in Toronto. Do you attribute that to being the biggest failure during his tenure?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously in hindsight, that's what you look at. You sit there and say that, you know, it's ironic with Brian Burke because we all remember how his time in Vancouver ended with Dan Cloutier and his comments at the time saying, I will never be caught short in net again. And then it comes to Toronto and his defining mistake as far as the roster goes is goaltending. And look, it's tough. I mean, we can point and at the goaltenders that he brought in, and we can point at the numbers they put up and say clearly it's been the Achilles heel of the Maple Leafs over the years. Frankly, it's tough to find goaltending, and there's a ton of luck involved in finding goaltending. I mean, it's all well and good to point and say he should have gone out and got a marquee guy, but there's not that many guys available. It's not like Martin Brodeur was available for trade in 2009. So it's difficult. What he did was he brought in as many talented young goaltenders as he could, and he hoped that one of them would turn out. I mean, we remember the hype around Jonas Gustafsson. We saw what happened with James Reimer, at least temporarily. There's a lot of good young goaltenders in the system, but he was never able to find that guy who could just come in and suddenly be that Cam Ward guy who comes in and the light goes off and suddenly you've got yourself a goaltender and you don't have to worry about it. And whether you chalk that up to bad scouting, whether you chalk it up to bad personnel moves, or whether it's just bad luck, you know, I'm not sure what that is. But at the end of the day, he never did find the guy, and everything else that happened as far as putting the roster together always seemed to just fall apart based on what happened in net.
Where do you see the Leafs going from here? Like, what do you see them doing?
Well, I mean, I don't know. My first thought is to think that the roster they have right now is essentially exactly the same roster they had last year, with very, very small changes. So I don't have any reason to believe that this current roster is going to go out and perform much differently than what we saw last year, which is to say I don't think it's a playoff team. I don't think it's a team that necessarily gets close to the playoffs. It's a short season, so random chance is going to factor in a lot more, and that helps a bad team like the Leafs, but I have no reason to think that this team's going to be any better. The wild card in all this is what does Dave Nonis do? And it's easy to look at it and say, well, Dave Nonis was Brian Burke's right-hand man, so it's not like he's going to suddenly shake it up, but you never know. Somebody on Twitter made what I thought was a great point. They said Dave Nonis is the guy who was the point man on a lot of the trade talks, at least the stuff that started off before it got to Brian Burke. So he's probably got some stuff in his back pocket that maybe Brian Burke said no to, and maybe he's willing to go and do it. We also don't know how much, if any, pressure he's getting from the board. Maybe the board told him your first duty is to go out and get Roberto Luongo, whatever the cost is. So I suspect that what you're going to see are some major changes, and I think you'll see the Leafs be the big mover and shaker over the next week once teams are allowed to make roster moves again, and you'll see Dave Nonis really try to establish himself. But I can't say that for sure. It's quite possible that he may go out and try to make moves, and every other GM smells the blood in the water and really tries to hold him up. Or it's possible that he really does stick with what he's got and takes a more patient approach. And if anything, the one thing about changing general managers is it does tend to buy you a little bit of time in the eyes of the public. So maybe fans will accept yet another year without the playoffs. It's hard to say. I mean, it could really go in any direction. I can't imagine Dave Nonis is ready to stand pat right now. But really, who knows what's going on with this organization.
One of the biggest concerns I have, I know you mentioned random chance in such a short season. I worry as a fan how that short season is going to affect some of the personnel moves that get made throughout the course of a season.
God, from an Ottawa perspective, I hope they don't go and buy all in on some big star and sell the farm. But yeah, it's just going to be fun to watch. It's such a dramatic turnaround for Toronto, so it's going to be fascinating to watch unfold. Sean, thanks for coming on the show. It was short notice, and you did a great job. You nailed it. Readers, you can check him out at Down Goes Brown on Twitter, and you can go out and buy his book, The Best of Down Goes Brown, Greatest Hits, Brand New Classics to Be. Sean, thanks for coming on the show. We loved having you on.
Thanks very much for having me.
Take care.
Bye.
Great interview with Sean. It's nice to get a Toronto fan's perspective of what the hell is going down there. Like, for as an outsider, Sens fan, obviously you have the divisional rival thing going on, and it's always fun, easy, low-hanging fruit to poke fun at the Leafs for their situation and plight for the past, 8 years? They haven't made the playoffs since 2004? And you wonder what's going on sometimes with some of the decision-making that is made. And over the past couple of years, we've heard that their organization was hiring, using some of their funds to allocate towards this awesome GM brain trust that they were bringing in. They had Rick Dudley and a number of other guys brought in. And yeah, here we are today.
Oh, hugely unexpected.
Dudley's gone to Montreal. Burke is out. Nonis is in. Can this get better?
I don't know the answer to that. It was so unexpected today. It's like, I don't know. As a Leafs fan,
I don't think it instills a ton of confidence in your ownership group to do something properly. Because why today? Why not 6 months ago?
That's the weird thing. Like, the season's about to start. Everything's being planned.
And there's still personnel decisions to be made before camp and the rest of it. It's tough. Unless Nonis knows exactly what he wants to do. But like you said earlier in the interview, he didn't look like a guy who necessarily was thrilled to be taking over at this moment.
Maybe just shocked. Maybe he, like, I don't know how, him and Brian.
It looked like he was in the stall throwing up 10 minutes before he went out there. He looked pale, pasty,
Toronto
green.
Media. But, where do they go from here? And as Sean was saying, so unexpected.
And it's not like everything, you're right, though. It's not like everything Burke did was bad. There was the Grabowski trade, which was great.
Joffrey Lupul,
Jake Gardner.
And Gardner for Boschman, who was underperforming and overpaid in Toronto. They got Phaneuf for practically nothing. Ian White, Matt Stajan, Nick Hagman. They didn't have to give up a first-round pick to get Dion Phaneuf. And I know Dion Phaneuf, was it him or Kessel as Mr. Overrated? It doesn't matter. Either way.
They're both not well-liked around the league.
He was still the best player in that deal, hands down.
Yeah, absolutely.
No pressure from Calgary to trade him at that point for that. Like, he's made some good moves, but...
Yeah, it's a bit bizarre.
Just weird timing.
It's weird, but at the same time, as an outsider, I'm appreciative of the fact that our organization here in Ottawa doesn't have that turmoil going on, at least anymore. For a while, we weren't sure what was going to happen with Brian Murray, and then the team went out and had the run that it had last year. So I don't really miss it. It seems like everybody's on the same page here in Ottawa. Well, I guess that's the biggest thing. You know, everybody realizes that this is a young building team going in the right direction. Maybe they could take one small step back this season and miss the playoffs, but I think down the road, this team will be better. Whether it's 2 seasons from now or 3 seasons from now, this team is on the right track.
Oh, and it all starts with that hire of Paul MacLean. I was thinking, when I was watching his press conference the other day, or his media scrum, and then listening to his interview on the team on Tigor, like, is there a more likable coach in the league? He's an awesome hire.
People love Mike Babcock. And I think part of that is the Detroit rub, obviously. Anything that organization touches is gold. Whether it's Babcock or Ken Holland, they're regarded as the pinnacle hires that you can have for a coach or a GM. But I agree with you. McLean's part of that fabric, right? Like, he came from those Anaheim and Detroit roots. So maybe I should be giving Detroit more credit than I have in the past. Anyways, sticking with the Senators, we have Denny Poffett coming up. It's getting close to that time. Do you want to go to Denny now?
Is he in Ottawa or is he down south?
I have no idea. We should ask him.
Yeah, I'm pumped.
We should ask him. I don't know if he's in town yet.
He's a legend.
He's a legend.
Is he going to be the biggest legend you've had on this podcast?
Oh, Gord Wilson, maybe.
Oh, Gordy. What a beauty that guy is. I didn't say biggest beauty. I mean hockey legend.
Oh, yeah. In terms of accolades and the rest of it, yeah.
But that's...
Yeah, it's...
Well, what goes on with that guy? I'm pumped.
No, it's true. He's up there.
See his take on the defensive side of things, the goaltending.
I'd love to hear his thoughts on the blue.
Like, how pumped are you?
I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. I am really looking forward to the season. And interviewing Denny, so when we get back, we'll have Denny Poffett on the show. Stay tuned. All right, listeners, we're in for a treat. Joining us on the line is a 4-time Stanley Cup winner, a 3-time Norris Trophy winner. He is a Hockey Hall of Famer. I could probably sit here for 6 minutes listing all the accolades this man has. Welcome to the show, Denny Poffett.
Hey, Grave, how are you?
Not doing too badly. Thanks for joining us. Creech, lead it off.
Just to start off, we're probably going to hit a little bit on the Senators' defensive situation. So have you been skating? Are you in shape? Are you able to fit in that top three pairings there?
No, you wouldn't want to see that. I think that from what I read and from what I understand, Ryan Murray is going to take a look at everybody in the system and give a shot to the young players that are already in the system first, but I think, he may be looking for some reinforcement. It's just a question of having experienced bodies, and we'll see what happens.
It's a bit weird. I think we're one Erik Karlsson injury away from Roger Sportsen having the deepest blue line in Ottawa with you and Jason York. But, Denny, you're a back-to-back Norris Trophy winner. You won in 78 and 79. How much pressure is there on Erik Karlsson to repeat what he did last year?
Well, it all depends on how you look at it. I mean, you're always a better player when your team is good. And obviously last year, in my view, Eric had an outstanding individual season, but so did the rest of the hockey team and surprised everybody getting into the playoffs. So I do believe that there has to be a good performance by the Ottawa Senators entirely for him to be able to hit those same numbers. He's also not going to have Philip Kuba, who happened to have a superb year as a defense partner and the experience, and a guy willing to stay back. So it will be a challenge. And there's no question that, last year, when teams are playing against the Ottawa Senators, they got a circle around the Colic and the Spezza and Alfredson. Well, this year they're going to have a bullseye on Karlsson for sure, and that in itself is going to make it more challenging.
Yeah, I noticed down the stretch last year, I think the Rangers, during the regular season, they were probably one of the first teams to really start targeting Karlsson. And I noticed throughout the course of that Rangers game, he was getting hit more frequently. As we saw in the playoffs, they targeted him physically as well. How big of a factor is the loss of a guy like Matt Carkner, who can be a bit of a deterrent on the back end?
Yeah, I think that you're right. I mean, Matt is a great guy, as you know. And he's a loss in the dressing room, first of all, a real gentleman and a guy who really gave all that he had whenever he had a chance to play. And so, but in the end, I'm very happy for him to get the contract he did to go to the Islands. I just think that there's a toughness issue that's going to have to be addressed because the other teams are going to address it. I mean, you brought up a very good point of how Karlsson was treated in the playoff series against Rangers in particular. I would assume that that's going to happen very quickly in this shortened season. Same thing. A lot of people finishing their checks on him and trying to intimidate him.
Do you see him wearing down over the condensed schedule just because he'll have probably a little bit more minutes than he did last year just with the thin blue line? And just part two of that question, have you seen much of Mathot play, and do you think that he can be that solid defensive physical presence that can protect Karlsson in scrums and stuff like that around the net?
Well, it's hard to say. Mathot doesn't, I think that he's he's a player with the experience. He's certainly a player who knows what his role is going to be, and it's a question of whether or not he's going to be able to fulfill it. Already a bit of damage on the back line with Lundin injured, and from what I understand, may not start the season. I think that, you know, for, as you say, Mathot, his role is going to be well-defined. Whether or not he can do it successfully is a good question that he'll have to answer for all of us.
How big is the loss of a guy like Jared Cowan?
Well, it's huge, you know, and I think in the development of a young player like that, it would have been outstanding for him to have played a full season, well, almost a full season, or up until now in the American League. You know, he had a terrific first year, and he made a lot of people forget that he was a rookie. And that's how good he was. My hope was that he would have continued during this lockout to be able to play, and I think it would have been wonderful for him. And unfortunately, the injury kept him out for the whole season. And now it's going to be a blow, certainly for the Senators. But on the other hand, you've got to get those injuries behind you. He's got a long career ahead of him, and I would believe a long career in Ottawa.
Cycling back to a little bit earlier in the interview, you mentioned that Ottawa excelled around Erik Karlsson. A lot of guys had great years. I think if you look on the team on paper, a lot of guys had career years or bounce back seasons. You talk about Jason Spezza, you can talk about Daniel Alfredsson, or even a Milan Mikolic. Do you look at last year as somewhat of a fluke season in which Ottawa's best players stayed healthy and they were so productive? Do you think they may have overachieved?
Well, in retrospect, when we went into the season last year, you know, we all had the hope that a lot of the good things that happened to Binghamton, remember the year before they went on to win the Calder Cup, a lot of those players had a lot of confidence, and there was a lot of experimenting that the team had to do. New coach Paul McLean, the guys responded to him very quickly. I wouldn't say it was a fluke, because I think that at best, everybody was thinking, and I was thinking, that they could transfer their confidence, let's say, of having won in Binghamton. There were seven or eight players that came up to the big team. We knew that Alfredsson was a lot better because his injuries had gone away. Mikolic had a great season. Cowan had a terrific season. Again, you know, and then the goaltending got shored up. So in the end of the season, you look at the performance and the play of the Senators, and you have to, I said to myself, it fits. You know, here's a team that wasn't expected to be in the playoffs, but they played the way they needed to get there. So I don't look at it as a fluke. I look at it this year as a challenge for them to get back, because playing all that many more divisional games is going to be also a little tougher.
Because they overachieved in the eyes of many experts last year, do you think that there's more pressure now to make the playoffs again this year?
There's pressure every year. I mean, if you don't do very well, there's a ton of pressure to get back into the race. The Senators did well last year. They were able to get career years, as you mentioned, out of a lot of players. Pressure is really a relative word, you know. And, you know, I would think that when pressure is there, a player performs better. And I'm going to stick to that. And that's the way I'm going to view the beginning of this season. Yes, this team was not supposed to be in the playoffs last year. They surprised a lot of people. And yes, there will be pressure for them to get back to that level of play. But when I see and read a lot of the pundits who are trying to pick who's going to win the divisions, I see a lot of them having the Senators in, you know, second place in their division right behind the Boston Bruins. So I think a lot of people have confidence that with players like Karlsson, goaltending that's there, Spezza, a healthy Alfredsson, Mikolic, and the depth that Tourist brought, this team should be able to be a strong team in this short season.
I'm glad you brought up Tourist, because I was going to go back to last season. At the start of the season, they had Stefan DaCosta and Peter Regan kind of in that second-line mold. It was probably one of the few holes up front last year on the team. And they gave DaCosta and Regan kind of like that 15-game window. Regan got hurt, obviously, but DaCosta was still around. And then eventually they pulled the trigger and made the Kyle Tourist deal to address that hole. How long do you think this team can afford to, evaluate their defensive situation before having to go out and make a deal?
Well, are you talking about shoring up the offense as well?
No, just the blue line in general.
Well, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at the UFAs out there and the defensemen that are available. And there's not a great list. You know, I mean, you got a Curtis Foster, you know, that is a big shot. A lot of the defensemen that are available do certain things okay. You got Jones, guys with a little bit of experience. I would think that the Senators are going to look at all of those options. But the best of all would be for, you know, guys like Greiba, guys like Weerkotz that can in and really be able to establish themselves in a short training camp and get a shot at doing well and maybe, you know, replicate what Cowan did. That would be the best possible scenario. So a lot of those questions cannot be answered, but there will also be trades being done early into the season. I'm sure every GM in the league is not ever going to get off that that speed dial with a shortened season like we're going to look at.
What do you do with the goaltending situation?
Well, you've got, you know, I read just recently where certainly Leonard is going to get his shot, and he should. I mean, he's right now, the last time I looked, he seemed to have the best save percentage of the American League. He's played most of the games. I believe he's played 21 of the 36 or 37 games for Binghamton so far. I mean, if you're an outsider just taking a look, you would think maybe he's the guy who's going to get the real shot at backing up Anderson. But Bishop is a guy who has had NHL experience. He's a great, you know, the great guy in the room and certainly has the big body. I would think that that, too, is going to be a decision made at camp. I can't venture to say which two are going to start the first game in Winnipeg.
It's true. It's tough to predict. Denny, before we let you go, usually when we have a guest on the show, we do a small feature called Quick Hits where we just ask you a quick question, and then you just give us the first thing that pops into your mind.
Uh-oh.
All right. Question number one.
Go ahead.
Best defensive partner you ever had?
Denny Morrow.
Favorite Stanley Cup win?
The first one. Philly.
Thoughts on moving the Islanders to Brooklyn?
I understand it.
Last question.
I think you want a quick question. I'm just okay with it. But they're gonna keep the history, and I understand they're gonna keep the logo, which is important.
And finally, how flattering is it to still hear Rangers fans chant your name at MSG?
Oh, I love to play the New York Rangers. You know that, Graham. They were an easy 2 points.
Awesome. Denny, look forward to seeing you in town. Hope to talk to you soon. Thanks for coming on.
Okay, guys. See you next week. Really look forward to it.
Take care. Denny freaking Potvin. Love it. Love it. Awesome.
I think he's jacked, ready to get back to work.
I think everybody is.
Yeah.
You feel for the guys on the production teams and the people behind the scenes with the Senators organization who were affected by the lockout itself. And it's nice to hear all the enthusiasm. And everybody's just looking to get back into the swing of things. I think, you know, you see that sentiment on Twitter that's just like, the hockey, you know. They took advantage of us. They used the fans as leverage. They don't care about the game. I'm kind of past it. I'm just looking forward to the start
absolutely.
Of the season.
The
drop
people,
the puck. Go for it.
Whatever. I'm back. I'm not happy with what happened. I'm pissed off about losing an entire season. But whatever. I'm just pumped to see the greatest game played at the highest level. Like, I can't wait.
Neither can I. When are we going to come back in here?
Before a season starts?
Yeah. Sounds good.
Once lineup's made, I guess we can...
Yeah, we can analyze that.
Talk about Winnipeg.
Maybe there will be a trade. We can talk. Yeah, well, you know what?
Maybe
we can scoop someone from Winnipeg to come on the show and talk to us about all the stuff that's happened over there.
Evander Kane holding up.
We should do a massive preseason preview and bring in some people to talk to us about what's going on.
I'm jacked. I'm ready to go.
The East is wide open. With the exception of probably the Rangers, who are strong. Rick Nash will help, obviously.
they needed some goal scoring. I think that was probably their one undoing. They couldn't rely consistently upon some of their top guys to score in the playoffs last year.
A full season, or a half season, I guess, of Kreider.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'll be improved. Or he'll bring what he brought to his couple games in the playoffs.
Derek Stepan, fantastic player. McDonough, obviously on defense.
Know what I hate hearing?
No.
Who does this shortened season
give the biggest advantage? Oh, people who say that are so full of shit. They don't know. Like Danny said, anything can happen.
That's how many times has the last two seasons, I think Toronto started the year on fire. Last year they were in first in what?
Perfect
November.
Lockout season for them last year. They were awesome for like 50 games.
It doesn't give anybody an advantage except for maybe the fact that LA gets a rest. But it doesn't give them an advantage over another team.
No, because Jonathan Quick is getting over back surgery. Anze Kopitar is out. Stuff happens. Look at Jared Cowan. Done for the year. Mike Lundin. Done for 3 weeks.
Hey,
he's going to miss the first 2 weeks of the season.
Maybe in our season preview, we won't even be talking about how weak our defense. maybe the Murray's got something up their sleeves.
They have a lot of forwards to work with.
I was thinking that as we were going. I mentioned earlier, the only guy I mentioned from Binghamton that could come up was Hoffman. I didn't go on, but you think you got Prince, you got DaCosta. Like, there's guys, Stone.
Maybe Regan starting on the third line so they can boost his totals. He's on a one-year deal. Maybe that's a guy that they flip. Let that guy play well. Give him 15 games. Bye. Could happen. He could be this year's Brian Lee.
B. Lee. You're going to miss
that
guy.
No, not really. I felt bad for him because he was a first-round pick who just never seemed to... Well, people held that against him. First-round pick, you should be more than a sixth or seventh defenseman on a professional hockey team, but look at Hugh Jessamine in the AHL. First-round busts happen more often than people think. And he played, and I thought he was, you know, he is what he is. He's a sixth or seventh defenseman. But there's nothing wrong with that. He's an NHL player. He panned out. Maybe he wasn't the awesome puck-moving defenseman that John Mockler kind of cast him as a potential Wade Redden successor.
Wasn't sure if his name was going to come up in this podcast.
No. You know what? We'll store his name away.
Yeah.
We might be addressing that sooner than we want to. But, yeah. Anyways, enough of the Brian Lee talk. I'm starving. We've been in here for, you know, an hour and a half. So let's get the hell out of here.
Done.
All right. Listeners, thank you for listening. Danny Poffin, Sean McIndoe from Down Goes Brown, thank you very much for coming on the show. And listeners, thank you very much. Take care. Enjoy the start of training camp.
Met a girl, fell in love, glad as I can be. Met a girl, fell in love, glad as I can be. But I think all the time, is she true to me?